You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, February 3rd, 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside Forbes 30 Under 30, a.k.a. the second best baby blues in San Francisco, a.k.a. the verified one at Tim Gettys.
Let's him host. It's a Nintendo numbers day, Greg, so of course that means I have to be here. Somehow it's always lucked out that every single time in Kinda Funny's history,
every single time on the show. It's never so. Not happened, you don't think?
I think so. I mean, I talk about this so often that I'm like, it has to be, man. I'm so excited.
You. I agree to an extent. Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like whenever there's huge Nintendo stuff happening, you are on here for it.
It's just, you know, they know. They feel it. I feel it. It's a Nintendo connection.
They're like, you know what? It's going to be a Tim Thursday. They got my friend code. It's going to be a Tim Thursday. Let's get over there. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, there's no time to waste. We have a bevy of Nintendo news to talk to you about. I have a whole bunch of... I got one. I got two. I got three. I got four. I got five. I got six Nintendo stories to start.
Wow.
Six a plumber's Nintendo dozen. Stories to start. Did you say a Bowser's dozen?
I said plumbers.
Oh, okay. Bowser's would have been a better play, I think, on the Baker's thing, but I appreciate plumbers either way. So start Europa Report. Let's get into it, because this, of course, is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show at patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Over on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, you can write in to be part of the show. You can get the show ad-free. You can get the show with the exclusive post-show we do each and every weekday. Of course, you get very similar benefits for all the other Kinda Funny Games content. Stuff like PS I Love You XOXO, the Kinda Funny XCast, and of course the Kinda Funny Games Cast, where you could go get watching live as we record those shows. You could get the Games Cast post show where I always win at Bless Who or whatever weird game Blessing likes to bring and everybody gets mad at me. It's a great
Wombo
time
combo.
It's all I hate Wombo Combo, and I still dominated the last time around, you know what I mean? And the best, you know, Janet tried to step up and I was like, let's go, and we went a few rounds, and how did it end? I won, of course. Woo! I was gonna maybe not spoil it for you. I'm gonna fucking spoil it for you. I always win. I'm Greg Miller. However, if you don't want to give any money to winners like me on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, no big deal. Of course, you can get every episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily for free. You can be live watching as we record it on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, just like Disruptoid is, Xander21899 is, and Lexi Gunner are. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up, so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, and listening on podcast services around the globe each and every weekday. If you need an extra way to support us, why don't you use our Epic creator code? If you go on the Epic Game Store, you can put in the word Kinda Funny as your Epic creator code. That would get us a little bit of a kickback when you buy some of the stuff there. You might say, hey Greg, I don't play any of those PC games. I play on my Switch, my PlayStation, my Xbox. Well, if you're playing Fortnite, Rocket League, or anything like that, you can use the Epic creator code Kinda Funny there too, and it really helps us out. Mm-hmm. Housekeeping for you. There's a brand new episode of the Kinda Funny podcast up. It is the Coelho cut of Kevin falling in his backyard. Of course, you've probably all seen the clip. I shouldn't say the clip, because there's multiple clips now of multiple days. But the most recent clip of Kevin just biting it as hard as possible in his backyard with Cecil watched in horror. You can now see the uncut footage as he goes down.
And let me tell you, you think you've seen it all. When you see the extended version of it, it is so much worse than you would expect. There are multiple points of impact.
It's the thing for me where that morning Kevin said it happened again. I was like, what? He's like, I fell in the backyard. And I was like, oh, and we all remember the first clip of him, you know, falling, trying to run back up for the Twitch thing. There's a great TikTok up at Kinda Funny Games of him falling for a million different reasons, including Tim's hype hat, which I was very happy. And my own baby, I guess, Benjamin. And so I was like, oh, okay. And then when the clip got posted, just the clip, the violent nature in which he goes down and he lands, and like there's so much room for his back and head to go back. And then the cut, I was like, oh, this only gets worse. And so I still haven't seen it. I of course had to step in for a Blessing yesterday who lost power because him and Michael Hyam can't pay a bill. And so I, you know now I can go in well rested and watch the clip myself. I'm excited for it. Thank you to our Patreon producers who can pay a bill. Gordon McGuire, James Davis, a.k.a. at James Davis Makes, Pranksky, Manny, the Bagel Boy Sanchez, and Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by DoorDash, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. 10 items on the Roper Report.
A Bowser's dozen.
Nailed the Barrett. Good job, CEO Junior. As I said, ladies and gentlemen, it is a Nintendo news day. Nintendo financials are out. There's a whole bunch of, there's a call about it. So we have a million different things to go. We will start with the biggest headline for you, Tim. Number one, the Nintendo Switch passes 100 million sold. This is Mike Minotti, the Games Beat Hottie. Nintendo revealed during its latest financial report that lifetime sales for Switch are at 103.54 million as of December 31st. Not only does this pass the 100 million milestone, but it also beats the Wii's 101.63 million consoles sold. Originally launching on March 3rd, 2017, Switch still has no successor in sight, so it should continue to sell. Major games, including Splatoon 3 and the sequel to The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, are on the horizon. However, Switch still has a ways to go if it wants to top Nintendo's best-selling console ever, the portable Nintendo DS. It sold over 154.02 million units. Game Boy is next on Switch's agenda, which, according to Nintendo, sold 118.69 million units. Nintendo, however, is cheating by combining the sales of the Game Boy and Game Boy Color. Timothy Robert Geddes, you, of course, are Mr. Nintendo around here. How are you feeling about passing that 100 million sold mark?
I mean, it's insane. Last time we talked about this, we said that it was inevitable. This was going to happen. I think last time we talked, we said it was going to cross the Wii, which it just did. And I think that we were saying that it would not quite yet pass the Game Boy and Game Boy Color. And yeah, they still have a ways to go for that. I think a lot of that has to do with supply less than it does actual demand for the Nintendo Switch itself. So it's interesting to look at it now, the number one console above the ones you named, PlayStation 2, at over 155. So that, I think, is the big question of, at the end of the day, will the Switch cross that number? Because I think it easily is going to do more than the PS4 at 116, more than the Game Boy and Game Boy Color at 118. Once we get into that DS and PS2 era of the 154 plus, that's the big question.
That's rare air, right?
I mean, that's absolutely insanity, but I think it's going to happen. And I think it's going to happen because they're saying this, we're halfway through Switch's life cycle. I think
number two on the rope for four. Let's bring that into the conversation. All right, we're gonna go to Bloomberg, where Takashi Mochizuki or Mochizuki says, or is talking about Nintendo cutting the Switch outlet for this year, but talking about how long the life cycle is going to be. Nintendo cut its sales outlook for the second quarter in a row as console makers grapple with chronic chip shortage that is likely to continue this year. The Kyoto-based company now expects to sell 23 million Switch units in the fiscal year ending March, down from the previous 24 million. It sold 18.95 million consoles over the past 9 months, a 21% drop from the same period of a year earlier, and said challenges around semiconductors and shipping may persist. Console makers have been struggling at the back of the line for semiconductors since the start of the pandemic, with compatriot Sony Group Corp cutting more than 3 million from its PlayStation 5 sales forecast when it reported earnings a day ahead of Nintendo. PS5 shipping costs have grown so high that the company is expecting higher profit because of the reduced number of sales this year. That's crazy. Back to Nintendo, though. The $350 OLED model of the Nintendo's handheld hybrid Switch, released in October, has also been hard to find in stores, suggesting the company could have sold more units if they were able to get them out to retail shelves. Component makers and logistics providers say they don't see signs of the jam coming to an end this year. Now, jumping a bit, I've jumped around this whole article, by the way. Obviously, go support Takashi and Bloomberg over there. However, back to the actual a quote they're pulling out here, right? Quote, Switch is just in the middle of its life cycle, and the momentum going forward this year is good, Nintendo said on a call at the earnings report. The Switch is ready to break a pattern of our past consoles that saw momentum weakening in their sixth year on the market and grow further, end quote. I want to pull in some context from Billy Gibbons over at GameSpot, who wrote about this, citing the Bloomberg article, but added this. Nintendo consoles have typically been released 5 or 6 years apart. So the Switch, which initially launched in 2017, is closing in on what would typically be considered its final years. It's unknown in Furukawa, this is Nintendo, remarks indicating longer than usual wait to release new hardware, or if he's simply promising to continue supporting the Switch well into the next console's life cycle. Tim, The quote is, Switch is just in the middle of its life cycle, and the momentum going into this year is good. Switch is in the middle of its life cycle. What does that mean to you?
I mean, I think it means what we've been guessing for a long time, and it's going into what I was saying about this ending up potentially beating out the PS2 to become the highest selling console of all time, and that is that the Switch brand is going to continue. And I think that when we get whatever the next Switch version is, it's going to be more alike than different to this Switch hardware, and it's going to count in the same family in the same way the Game Boy and Game Boy Color family, the same way the DS family are count as the same thing for hardware sales, in the same way that PlayStation 2 versus the Slim versus the different iterations they had, and the PS4 and the PS4 Pro and all that. And there's differences with all of those things I just said. None of them are one for one. Even the Game Boy Color is an interesting one, where the Game Boy Color didn't have many exclusive games that you could only play on Game Boy Color, but it did have 100 or so of consequence, probably closer to 10, but that's, you know, Game Boy was more of a numbers game anyways. But I do think that, yeah, like I was saying, thanks for bringing this up, Barrett, but the PS4 and Game Boy are done deals. I do think that even with the projections that they're putting out, that they're going to cross that by next year, right? And I think that their projections are lower than what's actually going to sell. Obviously, so much of that has to do with supply, but I think a very important thing to note from yesterday's or last night's reveal of all these numbers and stuff also came with Nintendo's plan for the next couple years of releases, and them reiterating where they're currently at with certain titles. And some interesting things to note there: we got Kirby's Forgotten Land March 25th, we got Advance Wars 1 and 2 Reboot Camp Spring 2022, Splatoon 3 still 2022, Mario Rabbids Sparks of Hope still 2022, Bayonetta 3 still being called 2022, the sequel to Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild still set for 2022.
Bullshit.
They're saying it.
I know they're saying it. They're trying to do that to pad their pockets with the investors. That ain't happening.
I think Zelda's more likely than Bayonetta, I'm going to be honest there.
Padding their pockets or without stuff, though, Greg. Metroid Prime 4 still on the list. TBA. TBA on that one. But it's there. Yeah. So they're still working on it. They're still acting like it's a thing. And I think that's an interesting thing to bring up because of what we're going to end up talking about a little later, I think, when we start getting into the actual sales numbers of games themselves.
Oh, okay. Okay. Do you want, I can bring that in right here if you'd like. Let's do it. Number three on the Roper Report, ladies and gentlemen, we have the top 10 Switch games of all time. And guess what? Shockingly, it's still dominated by Mario Kart. We go to GameSpot, where Eddie Macko writes, as part of Nintendo's latest earnings release, the company updated its list of the best-selling Nintendo Switch games of all time, and Mario Kart 8 is still on top by a good margin. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe has now sold 43.35 million units globally as of December 31st, I imagine Eddie meant there. Unless they added another date, we couldn't get out of December 2021. That's a massive number, even ahead of Red Dead Redemption 2, which was 39 million sold. So, your top 10 reads like this. Number one, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe with 43.35 million.
Sold. Oh, disgusting number.
Just because it's so many?
That's insane.
Look at that number. That's 43 million people, Tim, that will buy Mario Kart 9. You know,
that's what I'm saying, Barry. Let's go. But no, that's crazy, though. I mean, because you think back to the Wii days, like the Mario Kart Wii sales were like nothing the industry has ever seen, with rare exceptions. Of course, you can bring up legacy things like Tetris and, you know, all that, whatever, Wii Fit and the random explosive things. But Mario Kart, just a core title being released on the Wii, and it's getting the 30 million plus sales, was like astronomical. And here, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is just like, yeah, we're going to keep going up. And the numbers are insane because it is at 43 million. That is up 5+ million from last year for a game that came out 5 years ago that was based on a game out that came out 10 years ago.
True. Yeah, but it was a great game. All right, and Deluxe included fantastic. All the stuff we love, so don't get all crazy about it, all right? Don't get... And let me get through the top 10 before you get into this. You're in there dissecting it up. You're cutting it up like a kid who can't wait to eat this roast beef mom just pulled out of the oven. Number two, Animal Crossing New Horizons, 37.62 million. Number three, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, 27.4 million, which coincidentally is the number of spirits in the game, I believe, too. Number four, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, 25.8 million. Number five, Pokemon Sword / Pokemon Shield, 23.9 million. Number six, Super Mario Odyssey, 23.02 million. Number seven, Super Mario Party, 17.39 million. Number eight, Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu / Let's Go Eevee, 14.33 million. Number 9, Pokemon Brilliant Diamond / Shiny Pearl, 13.97 million. And number 10, Ring Fit Adventure with 13.53 million.
Good for Ring Fit Adventure and all those people getting fit, you know?
Yo, straight up, you're right. Like, that is such a shock. Like, that game is... We need to learn. You can't discount people wanting to get fit. Gamers wanting to get fit.
All we want is an easy, fun way not to be fat. And everybody keeps saying they have the answer, and then we do it. And after a while, you're like, no, this still sucks. Working out still sucks, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, hey, Nintendo got a lock on that shit, man. Like, these are insane sales. Like, to be in the top 10 best-selling games on the Switch, a console that is known for ridiculously high sales numbers for games, that is a insane achievement for Ring Fit Adventure. So shout out to them. Going up a little bit more from that, Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. Greg, let's put some context on that.
Please
that
do.
Game came out last month or 2 months ago.
3 months ago at this point, I think.
Okay, yeah, times, you know.
I was like, wait, that was longer than I remember.
Still 3 months and 13 million? It came out
in November. In November. That's
well, I mean, if you want context to that, I mean, look at this. You got three Pokemon on there, right? At number 5, number 8, and number 9. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? I'm going to bring it in right now, Tim. I'm going to bring it in right now, all right? Pokemon no, Legends. Don't. Why not?
Because I want to say, I want to clarify what I was saying real quick. Real quick. This sales numbers for 1 month, November to December.
Fair.
Oh, shit.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
That it's breaking into the top 10. Like, wow. That's just 1 month. That is going to be even higher later. Sorry. Now bring in what you're going
to
do.
Number 4 on the Roper Report, Pokemon Legends Arceus may be on track to be the second fastest selling Switch game. This is Matt Perslow over at IGN. Pokemon Legends Arceus is the second fastest selling Switch game in Japan and stands a chance of achieving the same accolade globally. According to new figures reported by Famitsu, physical sales of Pokemon Legends Arceus hit 1.43 million copies within 3 days of release in Japan. This lags a little behind Animal Crossing New Horizons, which is the fast... Huh?
Keep going.
It lags a little behind Animal Crossing New Horizons, which is the fastest selling game in Japan, thanks to moving 1.88 million copies in 3 days. In comparison, Pokemon Brilliant Diamond / Shining Pearl sold almost 1.4 million copies, and Sword and Shield shifted 1.36 million in the same period. So again, as of today, right, with this news report, 3 Pokemon in the top 10 Switch games, looks like that's going to be an easy 1-for-4 pretty quickly.
Absolutely. And I laughed there because it's lagging behind the second game on this list at a whopping 37.62 million copies sold after less than 2 years. Like, yo, Pokemon Legends is about to skyrocket up this list. I think next time we hear about it, it is going to be much, much higher. It's not even on the list right now, but it's going to be... Ring Fit Adventure
will be much higher.
I'm sorry.
Your time is limited, Ring Fit Adventure. You got your accolades. Tim gave you the flowers today.
Yeah.
Enjoy them. We'll never talk about you again.
Nah, but it's, dude, that is insane. It shows the power of Pokemon, man. Like, they can kind of put out something that is kind of whatever in the form of Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl, like a very, like, one of the lowest effort of the core titles they've put out. And that's saying something because it's Pokemon. And take from that what you will. It is what it is. It's a remake that had less effort put into it than any of the remakes in the past for a Gen 4 Pokemon game. And then they come out with Legends a couple months later, and the sales are just going to continue to just come in. They're making that money, baby. It's just hand over fist. This list is going to be Pokemon, Pokemon, Pokemon. But guess what? That's not even representative of the Switch as a whole. This is just the top 10. And the number 10's coming in at 13.5 million.
Yep.
Think about the up to 20, up to 30. Like, these games are selling incredibly well. I want to keep going up the list a bit. Super Mario Party at 17.39 million. That's huge for a Mario Party game. Huge. And then Mario Odyssey, even then, like 3D Mario, that's a very, very impressive number for that type of Mario game. Breath of the Wild, obviously one of the highest selling Zelda games ever. Smash Ultimate, 27.4 million. So Smash Ultimate is the highest selling fighting game of all time already. And it's just going to continue to keep growing from there, because just like Mario Kart, Smash has that kind of legacy interest where people buying Switches that don't have one yet are gonna buy Smash Brothers. They're gonna buy
Mario.
Question
for you then, and I hear you and I agree with you and I understand all this. I'm not surprised by any stretch of the imagination. Kart, obviously amazing. Animal Crossing, obviously amazing. We've lived through, I guess, actually all these games are amazing. This isn't me talking about quality. Are you surprised there's I guess if I'm glancing at this after, you know, all this, these years since 2017 and all the conversations and all the people who have bought Switches that I would know, I would have thought maybe Zelda's on top of Smash. And I know that Smash is so big with the hardcore audience, don't get me wrong, and I know it's the best-selling fighting game of all time. I know all this stuff, I'm not taking away from Smash. It's just the fact that with Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild being a launch game for the Switch, and that for the longest time seeing like that was the combo wombo you bought, right? You buy a Switch, you're buying Breath of the Wild with it at launch. I'm surprised that Smash was able to get over it, I guess. Maybe not, but it's just one of those, that would have been a toss-up for me.
But that's like a hard, like in the past, especially, right? Like, you know, Zelda is usually critically acclaimed and loved, but like Tim remind, like, isn't it like on the lower end of like usually like what those games bring in sales-wise? Like this is like fucking impressive in the grander context of Zelda as a franchise. 100%.
I'm not taking away from that. Yeah. I'm aware of that figure too. I'm just saying from living it and the amount of people I've, like, a lot of people that I tell to buy a Switch and tell them to get Zelda, or that, hey, I have a Switch. Oh, what do you, I'm still playing Breath of the Wild. And I'm like, you're not a Breath of the Wild player.
But that's the thing is you need to tell them to get Zelda. You don't need to tell them to get Smash Brothers. Gotcha. And I think that's kind of the difference of Smash and Mario Kart. There's just this like party vibe to it that people are just like, oh, I'm getting a Nintendo. What are the Nintendo games I need? And those games just have such legacy in a way that Zelda has that too. But Zelda kind of has that othering element to it where it's like, oh, that's for real gamers. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like just the to actually have the numbers for context here, like the second highest selling behind Breath of the Wild, which Breath of the Wild's at 27.5 million, right? The second highest is Ocarina.
25.8 is what's on here for what Nintendo released.
Then Ocarina is at 13.
Shit, fuck yeah, okay.
Okay, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then after that, Link's Awakening at 11, and then it just goes 7, 5. You know what I mean? Like, it starts dropping pretty quickly. We're still talking about millions of copies sold, and the context of what that means, especially in those time frames for video games, is very different than what it means for a system that has 100-plus million units out in the wild, right,
for
people to buy. So all that's different, but the facts that are people are buying Nintendo games more than they ever have, and they already used to buy them a lot. So that's crazy. But with Smash, I saw Daniel Amott on Twitter put out something interesting. So Smash Ultimate is the highest selling fighting game of all time, but Mortal Kombat is still the highest selling franchise of all time. Granted, way more entries or whatever, but that doesn't matter. This is how we count it. Currently, Mortal Kombat's at 75 million. Tekken is at 53. Street Fighter is at 47. Smash Brothers is at 69, baby. They're coming up. So, but the thing is, Mortal Kombat's going to continue to put out new titles and sell millions at a time. So I think that's going to keep bumping up. But I want to keep an eye on Smash Ultimate here because in this last year, they went up from 25.7 to 27.4. Like that, they're still selling millions of copies a year for a game that's been out multiple years now. Moving on up from that, we have Animal Crossing 37 million up from 34. That as well, right? Its second year of release selling 4 million new copies is incredible. When you compare that to the amount it sold in year one, not as impressive, but still, we're talking about 4 million copies of a game sold in 1 year, the second year of release. That is more than most games will ever even get close to touching. In terms of sales, like exclusive or not. And then getting up to Mario Kart 8, this is the craziest one, is it is now how many years on the market, and it is up 5 million copies still in 1 year. Like that number to me blows my mind. Absolutely. Is Greg frozen?
Yep. It looks like it.
I just blew his fucking mind with those
I know.
Numbers.
He is they're stunned. Impressive. He is, some would say, flabbergasted.
Now, let me ask a question. Can Greg Miller pay his electrical bills?
I don't know, man. Oh, man.
Oh, you gotta love it. You gotta love it. Sometimes karma, man. Karma.
Oh, wait. I got something in general. Internet is gone. I'm looking into it. Wow, they forgot to pay the internet bill.
This is the best. Talk shit. Get shot, everybody. You heard it here first. Oh, man. I see Bless in the chat coming to save the day. I'm going to keep talking, though, about the sales numbers here. So games that aren't in the top 10 but I think are important to talk about, Metroid Dread coming up. Metroid Dread not quite becoming the number one best-selling Metroid game of all time, but it is days away. We are less than 100,000 units away from it being the highest selling Metroid game of all time. So that's insane. It is at 2.74 million copies sold. Congrats to Metroid Dread. Absolutely killing it. I do not like how my face looks right now. Oh, man, it's great. Shit. It's great. But I'm not surprised by that. I am very happy for them because the game is super quality and Metroid is a series that I love. And similar to Zelda, like we were talking about in the last story, like it is a game that has been critically loved for decades. But the sales numbers, while not bad by any stretch of the imagination, were not like the tentpole top 10 Pokemon, GTA, Call of Duty type things, right? So to see Samus kind of get a win is awesome. And I think it's a good sign that Nintendo's library and focus on the Switch of not having to do a Wii and 3DS version of every single thing has kind of allowed them to reach into different IP, like things like WarioWare and Advance Wars and Metroid, with a little bit more readiness to just be like, you know what, hey, like let's try something different. And then they're selling well. And I think that when you look at things like Kirby and the Forgotten Land, that gives me a little bit of hope that they're trying to put some focus on some other franchises and maybe reinvent them. I think we've kind of gotten away from that.
Mix them up
a
little bit too, especially with Kirby, where at least when I was at IGN, like the maybe two Kirby games I had to play for like capture and stuff, like felt very like by the books, and seeing them try to like kind of reinvent franchises like the, what is it, Forgotten Land, the Forgotten City, I don't know anymore.
Forgotten Land.
Yeah, and people seem to be excited about it, of this Kirby Last of Us crossover game. So,
Yeah, and it's cool too with that, because you look at the Switch, and we've talked about it for so many years now, but I actually think it's been a while since we've talked about the fact that the Switch represented just a shift in, let's reinvent these franchises, right? Like, let's Mario Odyssey. What can we do that's different? Let's not just make a sequel to another Mario. With Breath of the Wild, obviously, what it did for Zelda. And now Pokemon Legends, I think we're kind of getting a return to a Nintendo we've been seeing the last couple of years. And I keep bringing up the fact that I think 2022 is going to be a repeat of 2017 for Nintendo.
I hope so, man. Look at what they're
talking about here, the Breath of the Wild sequel, Splatoon 3, Mario plus Rabbit Sparks of Hope. Like, there's enough things there that are like, they could have a reap.
But when you say that, it's like, I want to believe, but then at the same time, I don't believe. Like, Mario plus Rabbids, I feel like, is like more of a guarantee than anything else that you've said so far.
In terms of actually coming out?
Yeah, of coming out this year.
Yeah. That's true. But
it's just like Splatoon 3, and like, I know it can happen. I know there is a world where it could happen, but like Splatoon 3 and Breath of the Wild, especially because we don't know, like, we know that neither of those games are going to be coming out in the next couple of months, we have to like assume, right? And so like to have both of those be in their like second half of 2022, I don't know. That feel, for what Nintendo usually does, that feels like really tight to me.
I still think something needs to come out in the second half of the year is the thing that's missing.
Something needs to come out.
Yeah, and we're still so early, and I think there's still so many question marks. And I can turn on my camera now, Barry, if you want me to.
I mean, I guess. But like, here's the thing. I want to make sure you're not eating a fucking ice cream thing this time.
I came home with McDonald's. Like, I was legitimately in the McDonald's drive-thru as Greg got frozen, and I was like, oh shit, this is bad. This is not great. The fact that it seems like Greg Miller can't pay an electric bill. That sucks, man.
That sucks, man. What a disgrace, you know?
Who would have thought, man? Pay the bill.
It's interesting looking back at Nintendo the last couple of years, because I don't think any year has been having a pattern that we can kind of look at and be like, oh, here's what we're doing, especially when you add COVID and all that stuff to it. But 2017, when the Switch launched in March, there was a stretch where every month, except for I think August, had a quote-unquote major release, or at least a focused release from Nintendo. Some of them were smaller than others, but they really kind of had a good cadence, and having multiple banger tentpole games with Breath of the Wild at launch and then Mario Odyssey later in the year. And then obviously, like, moving forward, I think 2019, we saw a lot of the smaller titles, the Luigi's Mansions and the Fire Emblems and those type of things kind of having a similar cadence, and Astral Chain and all of that, where it's like, there was always something that Nintendo was like focusing on and pushing. That all got messed up in 2020, and Animal Crossing was kind of their one big thing. But then I feel like they're trying to get back on their feet, right, and like start running again. And I feel like they're getting ready to take off again. And I think that we will see a steady cadence of releases from them. I feel like it's already maybe even kind of started, and it's a little Pokemon focused right now, but like getting Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl, and then Legends so soon was like pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I think being this early in the year and already having Pokemon Legends Arceus, which is a big major release from Nintendo that is getting good reception, you know, I think that's already off to a good start. I know recently we got, what was it, Pokemon 3D All-Stars, or not 3D All-Stars, Pokemon 3D World, no, 3D Land? The big 3D game with Bowser's Fury in it.
Mario.
Yeah,
we You're saying Pokemon. I'm like, what the fuck is that? Oh, sorry,
not Pokemon. Mario. We got that in like a January-ish, February-ish time frame, yeah. Right? But I feel like when we're talking about major releases and like especially big new releases, to already have one is already very impressive. And we're talking about the cadence, right? Like 2022, I think it's going to be the result of us getting so many games delayed out of 2021 and out of 2020. We saw Nintendo struggle a lot. Like you mentioned, right, in 2020, we got Animal Crossing New Horizons, and then we got Paper Mario, and we got the Zelda Hyrule Warriors, right? But like those were either like they didn't hit as much, right? They weren't the big temple thing, or it was Animal Crossing New Horizons, which is like one of the biggest Nintendo releases in years and years and years. And so like this year, I'm not as hopeless for Breath of the Wild actually coming out this year. I think there is a good shot it comes out this year, right? I think Bayonetta 3, I think there's a good shot we see that this year. I think there is a good shot that we'll get some surprises at an E3 or announced at a Nintendo Direct sometime this year that are gonna come out this fall, right? Like I think this might be the year, not even just Nintendo, but across the board from companies. I think we've already I think gotten off to a really great start in terms of big game releases actually hitting. Dying Light 2 got delayed out of last year into this year, right? We're I guess Elden Ring got delayed, but like it got delayed from January to February, but reports were that game might have came out in late last year if everything went to plan, right? We're seeing a lot of shit get shifted into this year. Ghostwire Tokyo coming out as well. Mm-hmm. I think for Nintendo, I think that's going to apply. I think we're going to get to the second half of this year and have a way clearer picture on top of Pokemon and Kirby and the Forgotten Lands and like the other Nintendo games that we already know that are announced for this year.
Well, I mean, on top of that, like when you really start thinking about what the other teams are working on that we haven't heard from in a while, that's where I start to get really excited, because a lot of this, it's like these are known quantities or things that we've kind of expected, or things like Kirby that are not necessarily teams that we're looking forward to their next project on bated breath. So it's like, oh, cool, they're doing a Kirby game. I hope it's good. A little bit more in the guerrilla pre-Horizon type state as opposed to something like the Nintendo EAD teams, where it's like, what is the Odyssey team working on? What is the Mario Kart team working on? Like, it's been a long time for both of those teams to have been working on projects. What is it? What are we going
to
see?
We're getting to that point in the life cycle where we're going to start seeing sequels, right? Like Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild 2 being probably the first big one. And Splatoon 3 being another one, but I also do, yeah, expect a Mario Odyssey 2 or some kind of big follow-up to 3D Mario, whether that be Odyssey 2 or another big idea for Mario. I think we are going to start seeing those repeats or those second entries from that 2017, 2018 years of Switch. And so I think, no pun intended, good things are on the horizon.
Yeah, absolutely. Very exciting stuff. But let's move on to some more Nintendo stories. Also from the Bloomberg report, don't look for any acquisitions. Nintendo Chief Furukawa said in November that the company plans to spend up to 100 billion yen to strengthen its game development arsenal with a focus on promoting organic growth. On Thursday, he reiterated that Nintendo plans no change in its investment policy, though he also said that the company isn't against acquisitions if those are necessary. Our brand was built upon products crafted with dedication by our employees, and having a large number of people who don't possess Nintendo DNA in our group would not be a plus to the company. Not a surprise, right? Like this is the type of thing where you look at Nintendo and they've always kind of really done their own thing and went to the beat of their own drum, and they focus on their IP and very strategic partnerships when it comes to third parties and the type of games that they want to support on their platforms. The one thing for me, and somebody can you wrong me on this, because at this point they might have already done it, but a company that I'm surprised Nintendo hasn't acquired yet is Grezzo, which is their kind of port. It's their Blue Point, essentially. Like they're the ones that did the ports for the 3DS Zelda games. But at this point, they might have already bought them, and I'm just forgetting. But like, those are the type of acquisitions that I think make sense because the Nintendo DNA is there. They've already kind of proven it. And we've seen that with Nintendo over the last couple decades where they'll have these teams that kind of work on their projects or ports or elements of different games. And then they eventually get brought in to just be official Nintendo teams. And Nintendo's funny because it's not like Xbox Game Studios where we can name all of them and PlayStation having its PlayStation Studios, you can name all of them. It's like Nintendo EAD Group 1, Nintendo EAD Group 2.
It's like they're all Nintendo, and then you'll have some groups here and there that are studios under Nintendo. But even Retro, right? Like that's a studio that like I'm not surprised that they're not acquired, but at the same time I could see them being acquired because they've worked with Nintendo for so long and have made successful Nintendo titles.
Second party.
Yeah, like they're a second party quote-unquote studio. It's funny, like I read this and I think of Nintendo as that meme of like somebody who's minding their own business, meanwhile there's two people that are fighting back and forth in the background, right? Where Sony and Microsoft are kind of having that back and forth of acquisitions and trying to figure out like what those acquisitions mean to them, Sony acquiring Bungie to figure out what multiplayer means to them so they can stay competitive, Microsoft acquiring Activision Blizzard so they can obtain those IPs and those teams and stay competitive and really own that space. Whereas Nintendo, we talk about it with the Switch sales, right? Over 100 million Switches sold. Switch is on track to outsell the PS4. Nintendo does not need to worry about anything going on outside. The only reason I could see Nintendo acquiring a company would be if maybe a company that they really like working with is under threat of either going down or being acquired by another company. I think that would be the only reason why Nintendo would want to actually acquire a studio. Other than that, it very much seems like Nintendo is kind of like stepped to the side of like this big console acquisition war and doesn't really need to pay attention to it, which I think for them is a really good place to be. And they're able to do that because they're Nintendo and they're not necessarily known for, like, they don't have that same reliance on third parties and big outside of Nintendo releases the way that both Sony and Microsoft do.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the wiki for the Nintendo team. So Retro is owned by them now.
Okay.
So they have Retro. They have Next Level Games, which the Mario Strikers games back in the day. Also Luigi's Mansion 3 most recently. The ND Cube team that's known for the Wii Party series, but then also a lot of the Game Boy Advance titles that we all know and love, like the F-Zeros and stuff. Monolith Soft that does a lot of their JRPG stuff with the Xeno series and all that. Then we have all the research and development teams, the NTD, NEAD, all that stuff. There's a ton of teams, but it's just interesting that Nintendo does shit different, right? When it comes to how they play the stuff. And Grezzo, not on the list. So we'll see how it shakes out. Again, not too surprised about this, but I do think that at some point the question becomes, like, who is going to try to buy Nintendo and how ridiculous is that news story going to be? I don't think it's going to happen.
I was going to say, do you think that's ever going to happen?
I think inevitably it's going to have to. I don't think it's going to happen in the next 5 years, but I do think that inevitably it will happen. I think that there will be attempts, and I think we're going to hear about those attempts. And I don't know if it's going to be in an official capacity or if it's going to be some he said, she said shit, but it's like going to be a great week of Kind of Funny Games Daily. Could you imagine?
I cannot wait to read that Jason Schreier article. By the way, Tim, Chad is letting you know that
someone's at my front door. Yeah.
When you say someone's going to buy Nintendo or going to try to buy Nintendo, are you thinking Sony, Microsoft, or are you thinking gigantic big tech company like Google, Amazon, that type of thing?
I think at some point those become one and the same. Like, I would be surprised. I think it will be Sony or Microsoft, but I think that might be even with backing from one of those even bigger people. But we're getting into such crazy theoreticals that I don't know. But you just look at the numbers here, and it's like Nintendo's doing so great. They have so much money that they can just rely on. They don't need to be bought. They're a Japanese company. There's so many layers of complications that come with all of that. But the value's there, and we're talking about there's a lot of money to be made every which way from this. So I think that they have no reason to, but that doesn't mean that other people aren't going to try to get it because they're valuable as all shit,
So,
we'll see how that all goes. But before we move on, I want to tell you about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by DoorDash. If you've been listening to any kind of funny podcast, you know that we absolutely love using DoorDash. It's so great. It's so simple to just be able to order whatever food we want and then have it delivered right to our house, along with the restaurants you love. You can now get groceries and other essential items delivered with DoorDash. You can get some drinks, snacks, and other household items in under an hour. With over 300,000 partners, you can support your neighborhood go-tos. We're always talking about Volcano Curry in San Francisco, of course. Ordering is easy, and your items will be left outside your door when you choose contactless delivery drop-off, whether it is the local favorites or the nationwide chains, like things like Popeyes, Cheesecake Factory, all of that. For a limited time, y'all can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code KINDA FUNNY. That's 25% off up to a $10 value and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code KINDA FUNNY. Don't forget, that's code KINDA FUNNY for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply. And now we're back with story number 6. Nintendo interested in NFTs. Not?
Damn.
Question mark. Yeah, bless. That hit you so hard. What, I said not and your eyes lit up.
Thank God. Tim, when I tell you, you struck the fear of God in me. I was like, oh no, it's happening.
It's happening. Oh no,
maybe you're right. Somebody does need to acquire them.
But what if I told you they spelled it NFTII?
Oh, like me's, like NFTs.
Yeah, would that change? This comes from Chris Scullion at VGC. Nintendo has reportedly said it, quote, has interest in non-fungible tokens and the metaverse, but has suggested that it's yet to define what it could do in the areas that would sufficiently appeal to users. During a Q&A session following the publication of Nintendo's latest financial results, the company's executives were asked what Nintendo's stance was on the metaverse and NFTs. According to analyst David Gibson, the response was that Nintendo had an interest in this area and could feel its potential. He said, quote, this is a made-up quote that Tim's making a joke about. Hey, can I get your friend code? We can hang out in the metaverse together. Now back to the actual story. However, it was stressed that Nintendo wondered what joy it could provide in this area. It was finding it difficult to define this. We do have interest in this area. We feel the potential in this area, but we wonder what joy we can provide in this area. And this is difficult to define right now, the company reportedly said. Well said, though. Well said. I love the Nintendo. They're like, we're all about joy. We're bringing the joy. We don't see the joy in this. If there is joy in this eventually, maybe. We're not counting ourselves out, but we're not finding the joy. In a follow-up tweet, Gibson now claims that Nintendo's answer was mainly focused on metaverse. So, yeah, this is just a story because it has to be. They asked them about NFTs. They gave an answer. They're not doing them yet.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate, like, I think it's the fact that as a tech company and as a game company, and as a company that is always looking to evolve and figure out what the next step in things are, I expect them to be trying to figure out, like, okay, what is the metaverse? What are NFTs? Do we use them? How do we use them? Like, these are questions that are okay to ask. I think it is, like, what is the answer to those questions? And with NFTs right now, at least you hope the answer is no, unless you figured out some extraordinary thing to do with them that it actually is going to be fun and actually is going to be good for the final product, right? Like, them leaning out of NFTs makes sense, right? And it's a good thing. Them trying to figure out what their place is in the metaverse. Again, it's a thing where Nintendo is a company that I kind of trust when it comes to how do we take this piece of technology and make a good product out of it, make a fun game out of it, make a fun experience out of it. And like, for, I know the metaverse, I feel like at this point means so many things to so many different people and like has kind of a wide definition in terms of what the fuck it is. But if we're talking about the metaverse as like a space to exist in and like, whether that be like a social space or something that is like persistent where you can hang out with friends or do whatever, right? I feel like Wii U kind of had that a little bit already in terms of like the Miiverse and all this stuff. And I can see Nintendo taking that and being like, cool, how do we make the Miiverse? The more I talk about this now, the more I'm like, dude, I sound like a madman. But how do you make the Miiverse something that feels consistent, something that feels in brand, along the lines of Nintendo's brand of like having fun, hanging out with people and creating your own avatar? Like, I can see them doing shit like that works on a greater level. Does it interest me? Does it get me excited? Not really, because I can't wait. Like that,
but bless, think about it. Nintendo Labo metaverse.
So many words.
A lot of words there.
How do we make the Miiverse more meta?
Yeah, like, and also this is the thing of like, I don't expect them to bring back the Miiverse. Like, I think Nintendo's done with Miis, sadly, because I kind of like the Miis, but It is what it is.
And then moving on from this, we have a very connected story in a more negative way. Number seven, GameStop launching NFT marketplace. This comes from Dean Takahashi at GamesBeat. GameStop has teamed up with Immutable X to launch a marketplace for NFTs later this year. Immutable and GameSpot are creating an up to $100 million fund dedicated to providing grants to game developers and studios to build on bullshit. In doing so, it runs the risk of angering hardcore gamers and some game developers who have expressed their displeasure, to put it mildly, on social media. And many GameStonk investors who pushed GME stock price to well over 100 on the strength of memes have embraced radical new theories about ownership. GameStop said that building on the Immutable X protocol will enable faster, more affordable, carbon neutral, and nearly limitless transactions on GameStop's NFT marketplace, which is being built for launching gaming developer-focused NFT projects. Part of the reason blockchain games and NFTs aren't consumer-friendly is because they incur big gas fees for transactions. Gas is the fee required to encourage the blockchain to process the transaction. If you have to pay a transaction fee of $50 to $500, then it defeats the purpose of doing a $5 NFT purchase.
I have no idea what the fuck he just said.
Yeah, GameStop's fucking up. The GameStop's doing the thing we don't want them to do. That's essentially boiling it down. They're saying that there's going to be the zero gas fees and they're trying to figure that stuff out. That's good that they're at least saying that. But what's that actually mean? What's that look like? I don't know. GameStop holding on to relevancy as much as they possibly can.
I was going to say, does it surprise you that GameStop is still around? Did you think they'd be gone by now?
By now?
There was a long stretch there where it was just doom and gloom for years and years and years about GameStop. And I would have figured that by, if you asked me in 2015, I would have said by 2022, yeah, GameStop's not going to be around.
But what we need to remember is I feel like a lot of doom and gloom comes from just people almost wanting things to fail and trying to find ways to explain it in the worst possible way imaginable. And I feel like GameStop had some real close calls and had some real bad shit come out from it. But it wasn't ever at that point that it was like, oh, it's falling tomorrow, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that especially with all the dumb stock stuff that happened, like they're eventually going to go away. I don't think it is going to be in the next 2 years, but mm-hmm. we'll see. At some point, they won't exist.
Yeah. And this NFT stuff strikes me as a cry for, we need more money. Like we are trying to figure out, and this has been GameStop for a while, right? We're trying to figure out how to get the money, whether it is us figuring out how to turn GameStop stores into more of a hangout space as opposed to just a shop, which I'm sure got screwed by the pandemic, or if it's us, you know, leaning into legacy game titles, right, and selling retro stuff. It seems like they keep trying to figure out what that next step is to make GameStop work, and this seems like the most desperate of all of them, which saddens me, but also like doesn't surprise me, you know. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah. Moving on to some more positive stuff. Tim Schafer roundup. McCaffrey grabbed Tim after winning the New York Video Game Critics Circle's Andrew Yoon Legend Award and asked a couple questions. What next game to be your original IP? He wants the next game to be an original IP. Quote, there's some technical... Sorry, give me a second. There's been some technical other games that I've worked on that have been sequels, but the real... first real big follow-up to a big story was Psychonauts 2, Schafer said. I think it leads me to want to do new original stuff for the next phase. Coming up with new ideas is really where my head is at right now. Since Double Fine's part of Microsoft, Schafer was then asked if any of Xbox's available IP or franchises have piqued his interest. After joking about taking on King's Quest to finally get his revenge, he shared that ex-Double Fine programmer and designer Brad Muir had suggested they take on Warcraft Adventures. However, Schafer reiterated that the studio's future is all about original IP. Brad Muir was suggesting that we take on Warcraft Adventures, you know, the full throttle era adventure game that Blizzard made, but no, we like to make up our own stuff at Double Fine, so they will not be handing us any IP. What about turning a game into a movie? We often get approached by people saying, hey, how can we turn this into a movie? But you know, it's usually just a distraction, Schafer said. I think games are what I really care about and what I like to make and what I think are interesting. It comes up every once in a while, but it's never turned into anything. I've had lots of free lunches out of Hollywood. Good for you, Tim. I love that. When Psychonauts was brought up as an IP that would seem like a great candidate for life outside of games, Schafer said that while he agrees you could do tons of stuff with Psychonauts, he thinks that games are cooler than movies and TV, so it's already peaked. Classic Tim Schafer. You gotta love it. Congrats for the wins. How do you feel about that, Barrett?
He's just an absolute king. I love Tim Schafer. He's the best. One of the most creative minds in the the industry. I'm excited for what the team comes up with next, you know. Of course, like, I had only gotten really into Psychonauts this last year. I'd never played the original before last year. And so I'm excited to see what other worlds they want to go to and what stories they have to tell. I'm always down to check it out. Double Fine doesn't always games don't always vibe with me, but they're always like a game that I want to pay attention to at least and see where they go with it. I'm down for it.
Shout out to Tim Schafer. Like, Double Fine is a studio that I'm kind of with Barrett, where like some of the games will click for me and then some of them won't click as hard. And for me, when I think of the Double Fine game I love, it's Broken Age, which was one of their, I guess not recent anymore because it was years and years ago. Like, I know,
it's weird how like
it feels like that just came out, but that game is old now. But that's a point and click adventure game, right? Point and click being that I played it on PlayStation, so not literally, but it is a choose your own adventure game, right? Where it is a really cool art style, really cool story, and I'd love to see them revisit something like that. And like Double Fine as a studio is a studio that has that kind of range, right? Has the kind of artistic vision and weird, unique art direction. Barrett has it pulled up here, right? And like, I think Broken Age maybe has one of my favorite art styles in a video game. Like, it is an absolutely gorgeous game, absolutely unique story. And I love what he's saying here about wanting to make a new IP. And like, it's interesting because Xbox Game Studios is a publisher now with so many different IPs. And I've been having conversations with Mike on streams and off stream about like, dude, yeah, like, do you give somebody Crash or do you give somebody Spyro? Like, if I'm Rare right now, right, and I'm working on Everwild and we're not having a great time making it because, you know, it's a struggle where we can't find the vision or whatever, do you then turn to look at the huge bag of IPs that Microsoft owns and goes, hey, what if we made a Spyro real quick? You know, like, I'll turn the question to you, Tim. Like, you don't even have to take it from the Tim Schafer direction because it seems like he wants to do what he wants to do. But Tim, say that Microsoft brings you in, hires you, and they're like, Tim motherfucking Gettys, you're now the studio lead for Tim motherfucking Gettys Studio.
Love it.
You have all these IP.
Mm-hmm.
What game do you want to make?
Oh, I mean, if it's Tim Gettys Studio, it's 100% Tony Hawk's Pro Skate or something or other.
Ooh, over Crash.
Yeah, we got a good Crash. We got a good Crash remake, and then we got a good Crash Kart remake, and then we got a good Crash sequel. In my opinion, the best Crash game. So it's I'm happy with what we got at Crash. I would love a Crash 5. Crash 4 was fucking fantastic. But Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 remake was next level. They really fucking nailed it, and we didn't get anything new. So I would definitely want something new, and I would want it to be the team that made that one, Vicarious Visions, but they're gone. But more than that, like, let Toys for Bob just do what they want to do. That's what I would want. Is I would want to go to them and be like, hey, Bob, Mr. Bob, what game do you want? Do you want to make a new Spyro? Do you want to make another Crash? What do you want to just do a new IP? What toys do you want to play with, Bob? And then let them go. Because I feel like that's really where the passion comes through. Like, I think that when you look at Activision's teams, the Toys for Bob, the High Moon Studios, the Vicarious Visions, like that whole group, Beenox, like they have proven that they have talents and skills. They can be used in so many ways, including making Call of Duty maps. But the Crash remakes, and Crash 4 and Tony Hawk's Pro Skater remakes, those were good because those teams cared and wanted them to be what they were. They really gave a fucking understood what they were working on, what it means. And it's not just, oh, we're making a video game. It's like, yo, there's something with this IP. So let them do whatever the hell they want to do.
Mm. Yeah, I think if Microsoft came to me and they were like, Bless, you now own Bless's best games, right? I have my own game studio and I pick an IP. I mean, I want to say Jeff Horst Gemini, even though I know that's not going to sell. Right? I know people aren't going to buy Jeff Horst Gemini. That's just making it for myself. I'm like, Tony Hawk also comes to mind. I might make Spyro, because Spyro, I feel like, has been too dormant for too long. I know we got the Spyro remakes, but we've not gotten a good new Spyro game in such a long time. And I know that there's a fan base out there that would appreciate like a good new Spyro game.
I mean, I there's no way that wasn't the plan.
Yeah.
A Spyro 4 was just looking at how they were releasing games and their cadence of just production schedules. Like, Spyro 4, I guarantee, was at least being worked on. Will we ever see it? I'm starting to doubt that based on how they've shuffled the teams around. But I don't know. Anything can happen these days. But let's move on to story number 9. Ollie Ollie World Review Roundup on Metacritic right now, as of 8:30 a.m., It's at an 85. IGN gave it a 9. Cam Shea saying, Radlandia may seem like an offbeat location for a skating game, but in reality, it's a wonderfully eclectic reflection of what Ollie Ollie World itself is trying to be. In this vibrant place, skating is an obsession and an escape. Whether you're wall riding through a forest or grinding across an incredibly industrial factory scape, its gameplay has enough depth to challenge hardcore players to master its level-long combos, but it's also a smooth and exciting ride for novices, backed by characters that are quirky and passionate. These elements ring true in every facet of its design, from the more forgiving approach to basic gameplay through the new mechanics and refinements that make the skill ceiling higher than ever. Ollie Ollie World is a fantastic evolution of what was already outstanding in the series.
Now, Tim, can I stop you right there?
Yes, you can.
I just got a call on my phone. Greg Miller, what's up?
Hi, Blessing. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now stop there. Barrett, can you hear Greg?
I can.
Okay. Greg, continue. What's up?
You know, Bless, I just wanted to call, say I apologize for some of the things I said about you on the show earlier. You know, making light of some stuff. Turns out it can happen to anybody, you know? It's just, can happen to anybody, and I apologize.
Forgetting to pay your electric bill can happen to anybody.
Hold on. Barrett said that forgetting to pay your electric bill can happen to anybody, which I agree with. You know, that goes all ways. You never know. You know, that bill comes through, you forget to check the mail. The bill comes due.
You're ahead of it. You think you've done it already. You know what I mean? I got to pay this every month? That seems like a racket.
Yeah, like who decided every month? You know, it's right. Like, well, what do you expect from us as human beings? You know how many bills we have that are monthly? It's like, yo, let's crank these things up to yearly, because it's kind of ridiculous to have so many responsibilities that you got to fulfill monthly. That's only 30 days.
Just take the money automatically. You know what I mean? Why do you need? Just tell me. Just take it. I use the electricity. Take it.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, Greg. I appreciate the apology.
Okay, we're on the same page. No problem.
I accept it. Have fun in the dark.
GameSpot gave it a 9, saying there's still so much to Ollie Ollie World that can always leave a course to try something else for a while before coming back. That freedom to just leave a problem and tackle it again later, or to shut off the point scoring part of your brain and get into the flow, is what makes Ollie Ollie World so endearing. Game Informer gave it an 8. This comes from Blake Hester, saying, all in all, I really enjoyed my time with Ollie Ollie World. It's a gorgeous and goofy game that onboards new players well, while also giving veterans plenty of challenge. Barrett, you've been playing this as well, right?
I have. I've been playing for like the last week or so. It's been kind of like my game in between all of the other millions of games, because there's so many fucking games out here. But it's my kind of like, I just want to turn my brain off and just skate. And I did not really vibe with the first two Ollie Ollie games. And yeah, this one just really grabbed me. I love the vibe, the kind of like the different art direction they went with. The soundtrack is really fun. The creative character is like really, really in depth. And you can like really get fun with it. And yeah, just like the skating mechanics are really fun. Kind of like one of those like simple to learn but difficult to master situations that gets you really addicted into like just doing runs over and over again and like repeating levels to either like improve your overall like level score or to do like other like little side objectives and stuff. There's a lot of replay value in it. I think it's the perfect game of like if you know, you're not in the mood for like a big, like, you know, you're laying down, you want to play something, but you don't want to like get into a story or anything. And you just want to kind of like tune out to, you know, TV or something in the background, just play something. I think this is the perfect, perfect game to kind of have that for. I think it's really silly and fun and goofy. And I think it's definitely worth checking out in this already very busy month. And I would not have expected to say that a couple of weeks ago, that, yeah, people should be paying attention to Ollie Ollie World, because it's one of those, it's so early in the year, but like I could see this being on my like top 10 of the year.
Wow.
Low on the top 10, but still like up there.
Yeah, Ollie Ollie World is a game I've only played the first hour of. Like Barrett mentioned, there's so many games, and so it was me bouncing between Ollie Ollie World, Dying Light 2, and then other games, right? And then Horizon comes in. I'm like, well, I guess I'm not gonna play the rest of Ollie Ollie World, because I liked it in that first hour, but I wasn't in love with it in a way that just made me want to keep going. But I will say that like it already had its hooks in me more than Ollie Ollie 2 did, because I had tried Ollie Ollie 2 and I just wasn't digging it. And hopping into Ollie Ollie World, I can kind of see the motions where it kind of has that. I don't want to compare it to a mobile game, because it's better than like what you think of when I say it reminds me of a mobile game, but it kind of has that level of, hey, each level has its objectives that you can do, right? Like, its bonus objectives that you can do to, like, get the higher score. And so, like, you know, pop the 5 balloons during this level. Do a combo that's worth this much by the time you get to the end of the level. Those types of things that are your extra objectives. And in a world where I had more free time and I wasn't playing other games, I could see myself going down the path of, like, before I go to bed, popping on my Switch, hanging out and, like, doing a level and trying to hit every single bonus objective and 100%ing it. It seems like that kind of game.
And it is really fun. And, like, the part of the fun is, like, how surprisingly challenging it gets as well, because there are those bonus objectives can get really tough. And, like, I've spent, like, I think there's, like, 5 areas and I'm halfway through the second one. And I probably have, like, a good 6-7 hours into the game, but that's just because I've been, like, taking my time with every single level as I go through them and trying to do everything. And it is, like, again, it's one of those things where it, like, it took priority over Pokemon as, like, my Switch game that I play at bedtime kind of thing. And yeah, absolutely, it's so fun to just, like, pick up, play for 15-20 minutes and then fall asleep.
I mean, Bear, it's that season, right?
Bless, if you go outside right now, I guarantee you that you can hear the leaves changing colors.
This is a sign. Why, Bear? Why is that?
It's because it's review season.
It's review season.
Everyone, I'm going to need you to stop what you're doing. Go outside and see if you can hear the leaves changing colors, okay? And if not, stick your tongue out. See if you can
taste the pollen. Taste the pollen of the seasons changing.
Story number 10, Tiny Tina's Gone Gold. There you go. IGN put up a preview of it yesterday. You can check that out for their IGN first stuff. If you want some more Borderlands, you can get some. It's coming soon. Yeah. And then story number 11, Phil Spencer's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award at DICE. The Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences today announced that Phil Spencer, CEO of Microsoft Gaming, will be the recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award. Spencer will be honored at the 25th Annual DICE Awards ceremony, which will be held at the Mandalay Bay, blah, blah, blah. You already know this stuff. Greg's hosting it. That's really cool, really exciting. Congrats to Uncle Phil.
That's awesome. Congratulations, mm-hmm. Phil. Phil is amazing. Thank you. I love this image that Barrett brought up of Phil Spencer holding the Xbox Series X like a bazooka. What movie is this supposed to be? Is this like Rambo?
Is it Rambo? I thought I was convinced this was Schwarzenegger, but yeah, when you say Rambo, that makes more sense.
We're going to need Nick to get involved in this. This is above my pay grade for sure.
It's Commando.
Commando. Yeah.
So that is Schwarzenegger. Barrett, right?
Yeah, me and you were in the same place. So it's like, that's Schwarzenegger. Yeah. But
you know what? I'm proud that I could identify Schwarzenegger by his fucking arms. But
yeah. I mean, that's all Phil, baby. But hey. Us watching Commando for the first time seems so far away. Bless, if I wanted to know what was coming to Mom and Grab Shops today, where would I look?
Oh, you will look toward the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Tim, do the jingle at one point, please. Yes.
No. Out today, Nintendo says you can relive your childhood and experience the classic humongous entertainment adventures of Pajama Sam, Putt-Putt, Freddy Fish, and Spy Fox
with the whole family
on Nintendo Switch today.
I so badly want to hit up Mike and be like, yo, I know we planned for Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. What if you played some Spy Fox on stream? You know, let's take a trip down memory lane and play some Spy Fox. Shout out to that. I want to see more of this, honestly. Like, old-ass educational computer games coming to Nintendo Switch. That's fantastic.
I love it. Good for them.
Nano in the chat says it comes with new content, apparently. So
no way. Whoa. No way. I don't believe you. That's crazy.
That is fantastic. Sherlock Holmes Crimes and Punishment on Switch, The 100 Year Kingdom on Switch and PC, 1cc Game Shump Collection, the fuck, on Switch, Food Delivery Battle on Switch, Draw a Stick Man Epic on Switch, Super Shadow Break Showdown Ninja vs. the Three Kaijus on Switch, Phlegathon on Switch, and this week brings a brand new Power Cruiser to GTA Online, the Western Reaver. It's now available to purchase. New dates for you. Polygon says Silk Sonic is bringing its brand of R&B to Fortnite. Bruno Mars and Anderson Max, the musical duo, will get in-game skins as part of the Icon series, as well as a few other cosmetics and a new radio station to listen to while you drive around the island. All of Silk Sonic's items will arrive on February 10th. Roman Mechanics.
I want a campaign to get Gunner in Fortnite. All right. We got to be pushing P in Fortnite chat. All right. Let's all tweet at Epic. Let them know that we want Gunner in Fortnite. Isn't that right, Roger?
Pushing P.
Pushing P.
Also, this is gameplay for Draw a Stick Man Epic.
Love it. Freaking love it. Rover Mechanic Simulator is coming into Switch February 18th. Claustrophobia, February 10th to Steam. Mago, the Villain's Burger, a free prologue of the retro 2D platformer Mago. It's coming to Steam on February 7th. Noel, the Mortal Fate is releasing on Switch on February 10th. Deals of the day. You can choose your battles wisely this weekend in free play days on Xbox. Naruto to Boruto, Shinobi Striker, Bad North Jotun Edition, and Greek Memories of Azure are all available this weekend for Xbox Live Gold and Xbox Game Pass Ultimate members to play from February 3rd until 6th, the 6th at midnight. Now it's time for your wrong. We killed it. We corrected ourselves for the things we got wrong here.
Yeah, this looks like what we caught. Good work, Tim.
Yeah, we nailed it. Nothing went wrong this episode at all.
Flawless. Flawless victory.
Tomorrow's hosts are Greg Miller and Married to the Games, Gabe Patillo.
I mean, that's maybe. Gonna be fun. Maybe.
Maybe. You know? Maybe. We'll see if Greg, you know, what else.
Actually pays his electric bill, you know? Jesus.
What do you think Greg's doing right now? You think he's just sitting in the dark staring at a wall? He's like, or he's like trying to defend his family from like the beasts that have entered his home because it's
not. Do the beasts, can the beasts detect that the power is out, you think?
Oh yeah, 100%. Like it's Greg, he has like a torch in one hand. It's like whatchamacallit, Jurassic World when Chris Pratt is like trying to fend off the beasts. Yeah. That's what Greg Miller is, but he's like fending off the beasts and protecting
his
family.
You think he'll befriend the beasts like Chris Pratt in Jurassic World?
I hope Greg does not befriend any beasts. We don't need that in our lives. If you're watching live on Twitch right now, after this, we got Mike and Blessings playing some Metal Gear Rising, maybe some Spy Fox. We'll have to wait and see. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays, and you'll watch the VOD later. But for everyone else, we're about to get into the post show. Who's it going to be on it? What's it going to be? I truthfully don't know right now, but I'll tell you that I'm going to be there, and we're going to have some fun. Until then, bye. I love you.